Before you listen to today's broadcast, can I ask you to do three things? First, pray with me that God would use this show to touch many lives in a lasting way. Second, if you're blessed by the broadcast, share it with others. Tell others about the Line of Fire. And third, would you pray about standing with us in support with a one-time gift or as a monthly torchbearer to help us spread the fire? If you'd like to stand with us, go to askdrbrown.org. Click on support. Be blessed. What does the 17-year-old daughter of a pastor killed for his faith, beheaded for his faith, what does she have to say today, just 3 months after losing her dad? You'll find out today on The Line of Fire as we come your way live from India.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the Line of Fire.
Well, friends, I'm sitting here in my hotel room in Mumbai, Bombay, India. About an hour from now, as soon as the show's over, I'll head over to the airport. Catch a flight at 5:15 a.m. through Qatar. God willing, be home about 24 hours from now. But as always, I'm humbled after this trip, this India trip, 17 times now I've had the privilege of ministering in this country. And I want to share some of what happened. I'll talk about washing the feet of a martyr's widow, talked about some other moving things I experienced, and perhaps stir your heart more deeply to follow Jesus, perhaps bring a bit of a reality check to each of us. Most of you listening from the States, in the midst of our prosperity, in the midst of a very watered-down, often carnal gospel. I want to bring in perspective here from India. Michael Brown, thank you so much for joining us. If you'd like to call in with a question, I will be able to take calls, but my goal on the show is not to get a lot of calls coming in. I want to tell you what happened, take as much time as possible to paint these pictures, give you some of the sounds and the feel of what actually happened. And as I said, hopefully stir your heart, excuse me, to a deeper devotion to Jesus, deeper commitment to the gospel, deeper perspective of what it really means to follow Jesus. If you'd like to call, if you have some questions for me relevant to this trip, here's the number as always, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Or you can weigh in with comments on our Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown. That's Ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. In fact, we should have some pictures of this trip up shortly as well. What drew me together with Brother Yesu Padam in India, what drew him to me back in 1992, the common ground that we had was our understanding that the gospel was radical, that following Jesus really meant taking up the cross and going against the grain. It really meant death to the flesh and death to self-will, and that that was the basic claim of the gospel, that Jesus died for us to purchase us so that we no longer live for ourselves, but live for him. And while we're imperfect, while we have flaws and issues that we work through in this world and experience the grace and mercy of God every day, the call of Jesus is a radical call. I remember the first trip to India in 93, that some of the pastors there were fed up with some of the Americans coming over. Now, there have been many fine American missionaries, servants, evangelists, pastors, who've labored in India, who do labor in India and around the world, laboring sacrificially, setting a wonderful example. Fortunately, many times the better known of the American speakers and leaders that have come over have done anything but exalt the name of Jesus and speak well of the purity of the gospel. And when I had gotten there, an American pastor had just been over and he was boasting about his great faith, which he said could be demonstrated by looking in the parking lot of his church building and looking at the multi-hundred-thousand-dollar car that he drove or his $3,000 custom-made shoes. And in fact, because there were no flights running the day he wanted to fly instead of taking a train as others did, as we did on that first trip, he chartered a plane, which was a big thing in India and so on. Anyway, all that to say, they were very turned off by this. And they were refreshed to hear, as they said, an American preach the gospel. Thank God, I'm one of many, many, many that have come with a message of the cross, a message of follow Jesus by life or by death. But that's what's joined us together. Most of the years that I'm there, we do water baptisms. We've done them in the Bay of Bengal. We often do them right on the property, on the headquarters of Love and Care Ministries there in Vishakhapatnam, on the east coast of southern India. And they've got a baptismal pool with the bugs floating in there, the whole bit. And it's a wonderful joy. Everybody gathers around. We've got some really good pictures from the baptisms this year. Everybody gathers around, and someone just plays on some kind of a drum, like tambourine drum thing. I noticed the guy just picked up a stick from the crowd and was playing amazingly well with his hand and the stick. Everybody sings, and the people get baptized, and after each one, everyone shouts and sings, and people look from the ministry building down from the balcony. It's just a wonderful sight. Little kids looking and smiling and beaming. But it's a serious matter because really taking a stand. When you're baptized, you're making it known, I'm committing my life to follow Jesus. And in many parts of the world to this day, including India, it could cost your life. The baptisms are done in Telugu, so I don't understand what Yesupadam is asking each of the people as they come in and the two of us immerse them under the water. But there was one girl from Nagaland, northern India, where they've had a tremendous move of the Spirit, and the vast majority of the people there are Christian. It's gone on for some years now. A young lady from Nagaland was getting baptized, and the common language they had was English. And it was striking to me at a water baptism, as Yesupadam would probe them with questions. Do you believe in Jesus? Believe he died for you? It's just the basics of the gospel. You're going to follow him. You're willing to follow him by life or by death? You're willing to follow him by life or by death? That was a question asked at water baptism. And while we were there, during the meetings, there were pastors, leaders there from the state of Orissa, where in 2008, there was hellish persecution. 50,000 Christians had to flee into the jungles. Their homes were looted, burned down, church buildings burned down. I spoke to one of the brothers from the ministry here that went recently on an exploratory mission to Orissa just to find out the conditions, and he was shocked because he knew what happened 2 years ago, thought they'd be on the way to restoration at this point. But no, in fact, the government's done nothing or very little. Houses still broken down, still bereft of earthly possessions. And this young man, Samson, Yesupadam's son-in-law, spoke to women there whose husbands had been killed. They would pour, if you can imagine this, they would pour gasoline on the wife and children and tell the husband, deny Jesus or we'll set your family on fire. And then certain cases, they would kill the husband. He spoke to Samson from the ministry, spoke to women whose husbands had been killed, and they have forgiven the killers. They're not looking for the government to take action. They said, you can't bring our husbands back. They're with the Lord. And as much as they fear for their lives, they want to stay there and be gospel witnesses. I want to take you into one of the services, and I want you to hear a pastor singing. And then I will tell you the significance of this song. Go ahead, Joey.
Aaj Prabhu ko dil dena hoga. Cross utha ke tujhe chalna hoga. Aaj Prabhu ko dil dena hoga. Cross utha ke tujhe
silva yetukoni ninnu
chalna
hoga. What happened is that in the year 2007, this pastor from Orissa had been having tremendous success preaching in Hindu villages and had seen 300 people come to faith and they were baptized. And there was mounting opposition to the work. There was mounting opposition to his preaching of the gospel, as a result of which he was severely beaten about the head and back. They stripped most of his clothes. They dragged him around like a dog. They shaved his head in humiliation. He was finally thrown into a hospital. One man stood up for him, and he was ultimately rescued, put in a hospital, where once they realized he was going to live, the Hindu radicals came to the hospital, and some of the doctors were going to poison him to death. You understand, in a hospital, they're going to poison him to death. There was a Christian working in the hospital, found out what was happening, got word to his family. They just took him out of the hospital, didn't discharge anything, just took him out, brought him to another hospital, maybe about 170 miles away, where he lay in a coma for 6 days. no signs of life. For 6 days, he came out of the coma, began to preach Jesus again. There was another terrible incident just a few months ago, just this past October, that he was in the middle of. Harrowing incident. His life is in danger, okay? And he got up and sang that song. And I asked him afterwards, what did the words mean? And he said it was that I'm going to take up the cross and follow Jesus. And I asked him, interviewed him, I'll be able to play, once we get back in the States and can edit some of the interview, I'll be able to play some of this. I asked him, are you afraid they're going to kill you? Are you afraid if you go back, they're going to kill you? He goes, never, not afraid. And of the people that beat him, the first man to strike him has since been baptized and come to faith in Jesus. That's the gospel. I got to wash that man's feet. I'm going to tell you more about that when we come back. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown coming away live from India right after the broadcast to head over to the airport here in Mumbai, Bombay. And the flight leaves at 5:15 in the morning, Qatar, and then Qatar, God willing, home after a couple more flights about 24 hours from now. But I'm so glad you could join me as I recap some of the moving, humbling things that took place on this trip to India. If you go to our website, askdrbrown.org, that's askdrbrown.org, click on the Line of Fire. There is a link to Love and Care Ministries where you can support a tribal pastor. About $30 a month, you can actually support a tribal pastor full-time. I'm going to tell you about an amazing wedding, a wedding like no wedding you've ever been to. I can assure you that I got to participate in earlier this morning before heading over to Mumbai. But first, let me get back to the story of the suffering church in India, the persecuted saints in India. We have many grads from Fire School of Ministry working in difficult parts of the world, including in communist China. And they've had the privilege of sitting and working with brothers and sisters from the persecuted church who've been in prison, who've been tortured. And when you hear the testimonies of people who've gone through hell and are still standing strong for Jesus, it is so challenging for many believers in the West. Again, it's one reason why I make the trip over to India every year. We've done meetings at times up to 40,000 people, pastors' meetings with 7,000 pastors, young people with 10,000 young people. But that's not why I go there, and that's not what we do most years. In fact, to have meetings with foreigners like that, like you could in years past, you can't right now. Very difficult to in many parts of India to have large crowds come for foreigner to preach. So I don't go there for that. I'll go there to minister to a few hundred people and spend time with some dear friends because this is the real thing. This is the gospel being lived out. When I preached the opening night from Jeremiah 1, about being called to serve God and belonging to Him and encourage the brothers and sisters who were going through persecution and who are heading back to potential persecution or even martyrdom. I encourage them with the words of Jesus, rejoice, great is your reward in heaven. Excuse me, that's how the prophets before you were persecuted. And they were encouraged by that to think we're standing in the same line as the prophets of old, being persecuted for righteousness, being persecuted for our faith. On the meeting on Sunday morning, one of the more moving, memorable services I've been in my life, the widow of a martyr came up and they asked her to testify, but she just smiled and politely declined. And just a little lady with two kids, and Yesu Padam instead shared her story, told her story as he just wrapped his arm around her. And then after telling her story, and I'm going to tell you more about that in a moment, a couple came up, a mom and her daughter, pastor's wife, pastor's daughter. They lost their husband, dad, just in September. In some of the areas, there is fierce opposition from the communists who are called Naxalites. Many of their leaders have been cut down by the government. They've been engaged in violent uprising against the government for years. In some areas, they have a lot of control. And there's a constant battle. Police are coming to Christians and pressing them to be informers, which they won't be. And then the Naxalites are coming to the Christians because the Christians are different and accusing them of being informers, which they're not. This woman watched her husband in front of her eyes in September be beaten by the Naxalites, and then they chopped his head off in front of her eyes. She got up there with her 17-year-old daughter. In fact, I've just got a clip, a few seconds of the 17-year-old speaking.
మీ అందరి నుండి నేనేం కోరుకుంటుంది, మీరేదో మాకు డబ్బు పెట్టండి, లేకపోతే సాయం చేయమని నేనేం కోరుకోవడం లేదు.
All right, you can hear, obviously, unless you understand Telugu, you don't know what's being said any more than I do. But you can hear the emotion. You can hear the pain. 17-year-old girl lost her dad. What did she have to say? Well, it was translated for me. This is what she had to say at the age of 17. All her life, she wanted to live for purpose, have a purpose for living, and live for a purpose. Now that her father was killed in the work of God, she has a sense of purpose. She said she was not looking for their financial support or for their sympathy. The great need they had was that pastors were afraid to come into the area because of what was happening, and they need a pastor there to help with the church. Right now, the mother and daughter are helping with the church, and they don't want to leave because they want to reach these people. Because they want to reach the people that killed the husband, the father. And they're not mad at them. They're not angry with them. They have the love of God towards them. Friends, this is the power of the gospel. And we did a foot washing that morning. And by the way, this girl just wants to go on in her studies. Yesu Padam's ministry, they are looking for ways to help her in her studies because she wants to find ways that she can do good and help the community there that killed her father. This is the gospel. And let me interject this. Some of you are upset because somebody wronged you, because somebody hurt you, because you're a pastor, you got hurt in the church split, your kids were maligned, you went through some tough things, somebody did you wrong in a business deal, and you've harbored bitterness since then. You haven't been able to forgive. Forgive the way Jesus forgave you. May I urge you to forgive the way Jesus forgave you. May I urge you to forgive the way these Indian Christians have forgiven people who committed atrocities against their family, who went as far as beheading family members, and they have forgiven from the heart. May I urge you to find the same freedom that they have found. Nishapana's ministry is now working to get a pastor to go up there. Yes, this is the kind of people they have. They know they might die, but they're going for the gospel. One of the workers years ago was preaching in one Hindu village and got opposition. And they came to him and said, if you keep preaching here, we'll kill you. And he smiled at them and said, I came to die. How are you going to overcome that? How are you going to overcome that? So this young lady, they're also going to try to help her in her studies, even though she said she's not looking for sympathy or for support. She then sat down with her mother. The pastor testified, different brothers in the midst of persecution. They brought them all on the platform. And then we had a foot washing service. Boy, I talked about that before leaving for India. It's only the second time we've done this in 17 trips. First time we've done it since around 2000. And the Indian brothers were washing the feet of these pastors that have suffered for the gospel and that are potentially heading back to severe suffering. So I went up to join in and just got on my knees, began to wash the feet of one young man. And, you know, you're washing someone's feet. It was so appropriate that when I went to reach down and pour water on his feet, one of his feet just had warts all over it. And I thought, this is the privilege of getting to wash people's feet like this. That pastor whom you heard sing in the first segment and profess again his faith in Jesus and how he'll take up the cross, I washed his feet. And I just cradled his head in my arms for a little while. And I thought, this is the head that was beaten. We prayed for his healing, too, because sometimes his right side still doesn't work well, and he's in back pain. The doctor said it'd be for life after this. We prayed for his healing, but I took his head and just held it in my arms and thought this head was beaten for the gospel. And then they brought the women up, and I want to tell you about that. share something very sacred with you right here on the Line of Fire when we come back live from India. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown coming your way live from India, where a couple hours from now I should be getting on a plane for the first of three flights back home. One flight already earlier today, three more back home. But again, deeply moved by what happened in India. If you have a question you'd like to ask me about the trip, about ministry in India, I may be able to take a call or two, but I'm trying to use every spare second of time to tell you some of the key things that happened on this trip. But the number is always 866-34-TRUTH. And if you're on our Facebook page, ask Dr. Brown, ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. As soon as we get back home, we should be putting up some pictures from the meetings, including the foot washing time that we had. What can you say? I hope I can hold myself together here, but I'm not going to try to be a professional radio host here. I just want to share my heart with you. Every year, for 17 years now, we missed 1 year during the terrorist attacks in Mumbai. We were unable to fly in at that time. So 17 out of the last 18 years, we've been here in India. And perhaps next year, if you put aside first week or so of the December, perhaps I'll be able to take a team with me next year, and maybe you'll be able to join me on the trip. But every year, there's a graduation from the Discipleship Training Center. These folks are intensively trained in the Word, and then in practical ministry, going out, doing evangelism, helping with church planting and other things. And then they are sent out to plant new works. In the Indian culture in which we're working, all the pastors sent out would be men. The women are often going to marry pastors or give themselves to intercession or other gospel work. They can be powerful evangelists in their own right. But they'll all be sent out one way or another to be part of church planting. And we lay hands on them, we commission them, we often challenge them. This year I preached from Hebrews 11 and basically told them that they're writing the record right now in between their life and their death, that death is certain. Some people live, unless Jesus comes in our lifetimes, it's certain that we're born, it's certain that we will die, it's certain that we'll stand before God. The question is, what kind of legacy will you leave behind? How did you live during this time? Some people spend all their time living trying to avoid death. What's the use of that? Other people don't know the rules of the game. They think the rules of the game are the more you acquire, the more you have, the bigger and better you become, that the better you've done in life, where it's the more you've given for others that matters. There's an old poem from Hugo Bassi, who measured their life by loss instead of gain, not by the wine drunk, but by the wine poured forth, for love's strength standeth and love's sacrifice, and whoso suffereth most hath most to give. So we did a foot washing ceremony for brothers from Orissa and for these two women and the daughter whose husbands were martyrs. And it was all women that were going to wash the feet of the women. excuse me. I'm just trying to hold myself together here. I asked if I could be allowed to wash the feet of the one woman whose husband I had laid hands on, one of the graduates from the Discipleship Training Center. We had sent them out to minister. We know the places they're going are dangerous. We know that's their commitment. We often pray with tears together. Somehow they admire me and look to me as some kind of example. It's just very humbling to be involved in the midst of this. And Joey, just put that foot washing music on. This was the music going on in the background. It was very serious. A lot of tears. You can fade that out, Joey. And I knelt down to wash the feet of this woman, now alone with two kids. You have to understand, it's not like, oh, you just go get remarried. You're talking about alone. You're talking about needing the help of the brothers and sisters, otherwise you can't make it. And I knelt down in front of her, and I thought, you know, we sent her husband out to preach. I joined with the ministry there in India, sent her husband out to preach. laid hands on him, commissioned him. He got killed for the gospel. Least I could do is wash your feet. And I just broke down sobbing as I knelt before her, took her feet and washed them and just looked at her, tears in her eyes, and then sisters around us just sobbing. And I thought, how can I explain this? I was in the midst of it, so moved, so humbled, just sobbing at her feet. How do you explain the devotion that's here? How do you explain the love for Jesus? How do you explain that he has become so important in their lives, so wonderful to them, so precious to them, so unspeakably glorious that they count it a privilege? They count it a privilege to suffer for him. They count it a privilege to be deprived for him. They count it a privilege to have everything taken from them. These women made clear, look, and the daughter made clear, my dad's with Jesus. That's what they're saying. My husband's with Jesus. You can't take someone's life. You can kill the body, but you can't kill the soul. Yeah, they're in pain. Yeah, they're widows and orphans. Yes, they have needs. Yes, they weep and they hurt. Yes, it's difficult. And yet, when the foot washing was over, you heard this music, and it was somber, and it was serious, and it went on for a while, and the sisters just washing the feet of these three and hugging, and everyone weeping, and then the brothers pulled me on stage, and they wanted to wash my feet after they washed J.C. Potom's feet. You feel so terribly unworthy the whole time they're washing my feet and hugging me and praying for me. I just, God, I'm not worthy. And then it ended, and what happens next? This is only explicable because of the power of the gospel, because our Savior died and rose from the dead. This is what happened next. Go ahead, Joey, play the clip. Rejoicing broke out. Did you hear me? Rejoicing broke out. They started to play music, calling out Yesiah, calling out the name of Jesus, and dancing and celebrating before the Lord. And this pastor I talked about earlier, beaten into a coma, beaten within an inch of death, 6 days in a coma in 2007, horrific incident with a baby that just died. The Hindus wouldn't let it bury. They had to keep the baby 4 days in the house and hide there. And then the mother that had lost her baby was pregnant, 8 months pregnant, and they kicked her and beat her, and she ended up losing her baby. And these are horrors. I'm talking about real horrors. But because Jesus is risen, and because we have life that goes beyond the grave and life that transcends death, these people, including this pastor and others, jumping and dancing and shouting and celebrating and singing, full of joy. How can the devil defeat that? How can the devil cut that down? And what does it say to us in America, with so much of our self-centered living baptized into Christianity so that Jesus exists to make me happy with earthly things? What an abomination. What a departure from the real gospel. What a departure from real life. We come back, I want to tell you about the wedding this morning, like no wedding I've ever been part of, right here on the Line of Fire. Back to Mumbai, India, Bombay. Michael Brown coming your way live from my hotel room here in India before beginning the journey back home. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Line of Fire. Hey, can I ask you to do something? Yes, this show is listener supported, and we could really use your help, and standing with us would mean a lot, enable us to reach a lot more people. But can I ask you to do something a little different today? Go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire, and there's a link to Love and Care Ministries. Get behind one of their pastors. You can support a pastor on a monthly level that is changing people's lives, and they live on almost nothing. You could support a kid in the children's home. These kids being trained and equipped, many of them orphans. So go to the website, askdrbrown.org, click on the Line of Fire, and there's a link there to Loving Care Ministries. Get behind what they're doing. Let them know that you're listening to the program today. It would mean a lot to them, mean a lot to me. So we always squeeze in a very full trip. Whenever I'm in India, I travel like 36 hours, actually 38 from leaving my house to getting to the hotel in Visakhapatnam, and then had a few hours just to rest, and then first meeting that night, and then meeting morning, evening, baptisms in between, other things like that. Well, I had a flight this afternoon out of Visakhapatnam into Bombay, but first, there was a wedding. They wanted me to preach a message at the wedding, and what a wedding it was. Two tribal people. The husband named John, I was told the tribes that he's from, they live on the plains, they live in little tents and move around like gypsies. And I was told that they are lower than outcasts, the way they live, the way that they are looked at by society. The bride, Karuna, from a tribal people that lived in the hills, also unbelievably poor. And here he was in a suit, certainly the first time he's ever been in a suit in his life. And she, of course, first time she's been in a wedding gown, but ever dressed that nicely in her life. And the marriage is arranged by Yesupadam. John is a very faithful worker in the ministry there, graduated from the Discipleship Training Center, is overseeing three churches and helping at the school. And when he was younger, he lost one eye. Yesupadam thinks it was the smallpox, so he's disfigured. He's got one eye and the other just a little crack and some scars around it. This is a couple that got married. Yesupadam knew that there's no way in the natural that they could get married, and with their background and having nothing, it would be very difficult. He just felt the Lord was bringing them together. She's an intercessor. These are people who love Jesus. These are people very rich in God's sight. And he approached John one week ago and asked if he would marry this woman, and he prayed and said he would. And then he asked the woman, and she said, well, if her mother approved, then her mother did. And she's terrified. I mean, it's just 1 week to do it. But they're both smiling and kind of glowing and beaming. And I thought, what an honor. What an honor to get to preach the word and to encourage them as a new husband and wife. And it reminded me of the outpouring that took place at Azusa Street a little over 100 years ago that turned into the modern Pentecostal charismatic movement that it has now resulted in literally hundreds and hundreds of millions of people coming into the kingdom around the world. William Seymour, a black man who was a societal outcast because of his skin color in many parts of America, and a man who also was blind in one eye, only had one good eye. That's a man that God used to help bring a mighty move of the Spirit into the earth through prayer, fasting, hungering after God. And I told that story and said, who knows what God can do through these vessels. You know, I had this thought when Yesupadam identified himself one night as a servant of the Lord. I thought, with all the flesh, with all the pride, with all the exalting of people, our gospel superstardom that we have, and the mighty man and the mighty woman and the pulpit personality and the whole bit. And I thought, you know, if we just get the revelation that we're all servants, think of having a servants convention. I'm often in hotels and they're the nameless, faceless people that vacuum the hallways and that clean your room when you're out and clean the bathroom and make the bed. And many times, if you try to communicate with them, they don't speak much English or any English. It's obviously not a job that a well-educated person of stature would get. And I thought, if they had a servants' convention, yeah, I make beds here. Yeah, I clean the toilets here. Yeah, I'm the custodian here. I'm the electrician here. How much pride would there be? How much pride would there be? How much exalting of flesh would there be? But that's us, just servants. And the highest calling that we have is to be friends of Jesus, to be sons and daughters of the Almighty, not to be some famous, big-name preacher. But boy, being at this wedding today and realizing how these people will live, the little that they'll have in this world, but the lives that they'll impact, the richness of their faith, the richness of their relationship with Jesus, it spoke to me afresh as an American. We come back, I've got some concluding thoughts about my time in India and how it relates to each of us. Stay with us right here on The Line of Fire. Yes, that's right. Those are the sounds of rejoicing from India. Michael Brown here on The Line of Fire. Yeah, you're listening to the right broadcast. Just tape that clip during the service after the foot washing of those that have suffered for Jesus, foot washing of those that are facing potential martyrdom, foot washing of widows and daughters of martyrs. After the foot washing service, we went to rejoicing, celebrating because of the victory in Jesus. Let me say again, that's the power of the gospel. During a break in the show here, I got an email from my friend and colleague, James White, just wanted to say hi and talk about getting together to do some things. And we've been blessed to debate each other on doctrinal issues. We've been blessed to stand side by side debating doctrinal issues as fellow believers. And I'll tell you, as he's on the front lines debating Muslims and others that claim to be Christians and are not, what a joy to know that we're here in the same battle for the larger goal of making Jesus known to a dying world. And I sent James a quick note, hey, I'm here in India doing my show, just got a break, told him about the foot washing service, and he just wrote back, of whom the world was not worthy, preach from Hebrews 11. Those that saw great victories and those that suffered greatly, all because of their faith, and went around with very little in this world, of whom the world was not worthy. Now, look, my goal and my purpose, friends, is not to lay a guilt trip on anyone. I'm going to go back to my own house. Well, we're renting a house now, but it's my own house, our own bedroom. I've got a car. My wife has a car, though they're not new or special or fancy, but we got feels. Boy, I got a lot of gadgets and computers, and I sure have a lot of books. You know, a lot of these people that we work with, they have one set of clothes that they own, and that's it. In fact, on the Sunday service, we gave out clothes. Now, Sunday night, we gave out a set of clothes, fabric for the men, for suits, and for the women, for saris. I've never seen so many Indians smiling so broadly, except when they're celebrating in the presence of God. I mean, I've never seen just so much appreciation and thankfulness. For many, this will be the second set of clothes that they have. But my purpose is not to lay a guilt trip on us. My purpose is not to say that we should be living on the street or living in poverty. But this is my purpose. This is what I'd like to share with you. And let me give you my bottom line here from Mumbai, India, before I return home. We need a rude awakening in America. We need a rude awakening as to what the gospel really is. We need a rude awakening to recognize the power of the gods of materialism. Here in India, the gods and goddesses are so conspicuous, the Hindu temples, the Hindu imagery, the millions of different gods that are worshipped. In America, they're more subtle. The gods of pride, the gods of the lusts of the flesh, the gods of sports and entertainment and prosperity, the gods of materialism in different forms. And instead of us changing the world, we've become like the world. It's time we step back and in the light of eternity ask ourselves, does my life make sense? It's time we step back and in the light of the death of Jesus ask ourselves, does my life make sense? It's time we step back and ask ourselves, in light of the fact that he was not ashamed of us and died a public humiliating death for our salvation, are we ashamed of him? Are we willing to stand up for the gospel? Are we willing to take up the cross and follow Jesus? I want to challenge you, each of you, wherever you live, go to the Lord and say, God, what is my life in your sight? How am I living? Read the word, get on your faces and say, Lord, I want my life to count. Whether by life or by death, I want to glorify Jesus. When you get a minute, go to askdrbrown.org. And we've got hundreds of hours of free online resources. Check on the online library. Listen to the messages that'll cause a fire to burn in you. And perhaps one day we'll stand together before the throne of God with these Indian brothers and sisters and hear the Lord say, well done, good and faithful servant.